The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PLAEUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 85. Iron Game Chalk Talk is a weekly podcast where I bring you experts in the field to talk shop. If you haven't already done so, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube, or join the mailing list at ronmckeefer.com to stay up to date with the latest things we got going on and the latest guests. This week, real excited, super excited to have Jeff Nichols with us. Jeff is the owner of Virginia High Performance in Virginia Beach, but got a really unique story, cool story. I respect every single person that comes on the show, but this guy takes the cake, man. Jeff was a strength coach at Troy University, went to school there, played baseball there, and was a strength coach, and then decided to get into the Navy. In the Navy, he ended up being a Navy SEAL for both SEAL Team 5 and 6. And we all know what those guys do for us and our country, and couldn't respect him more for the sacrifices that he's made, but also just the way that he conducts his business now. And so I'm real, real excited for you guys to get a chance to listen to him speak. We talk a little bit about, you know, how he's taken some of the values from the Navy SEALs and applied them to his athletes. We talk a little bit about focusing and dialing in our athletes. We're always trying to constantly do that as strength coaches, getting them dialed into the moment. And we just talk a little bit about some tactics for that. And we get into some questions that we need to be asking when we're going through kind of the selection process. You know, most of special operations is gearing towards, you know, really trying to identify people before they can, you know, they even go to Q school or special operations schools, to see if they even have the mental capacity to withstand what's about to happen. So, you know, we talk about all that and more, tons of great nuggets in here. You're going to take lots of notes, trust me. So go ahead and go get a pad and paper. But before we do, we want to make sure we recognize all of our sponsors. And we have a great lineup of sponsors this year. We have Elite Form back. We have IgnitionAPG.com back. We have PlayUSA.com back. Play was an original sponsor of the show. And then we also picked up Sorinex, and I'm so excited about Sorinex being involved. They're one of the most innovative companies that I've come across, and the things that they're doing with the racks and all the equipment that they're coming out with is phenomenal. So I'm fired up about them. You know, I want to make sure everybody is aware of Sorinex's Summer Strong event. It's not a conference, although there is a clinic aspect to it, but it's a fitness feast. It's a festival. It's a clinic. It's all the things that you love about going to a clinic and interacting with coaches and hanging out with them and talking shop. That is what Sorinex Summer Strong is. It started basically as a birthday party for Richard. Guys, you know, we all know, and I'm sure you guys know Bert and the gang, and what a fantastic family and a family that's had a tremendous impact on our profession. And so can't encourage you enough. Go to their Facebook page. They haven't released the exact dates or the speakers yet for Sorinex Summer Strong 8, but you want to be planning now here in January to make sure that you attend that event. And so go to their Facebook page, like the Facebook page, so that way you can stay up to date with any of the announcements that they have. But it is going to be a fantastic event, well worth the very nominal amount that they charge. Just some who's who's of individuals, not just from strength and conditioning, but, I mean, you know, Jeff Nichols, who's on the show, you know, the Navy SEAL. They've had Olympic gold medalist. They have had all kinds of people come in and contribute. And so it is a fantastic, fantastic event. But don't want to get to the show. I know you're going to get a ton out of this. Looking forward to it. And we'll see you on the other side. Take care.
All right, guys, super, super pumped to have Jeff Nichols with us. Jeff, we share a lot of friends and heard about this guy a ton. And, man, I can't tell you how excited I am to have you on the show, brother. Really, really, thanks a lot.
It's good to be here.
Jeff, you got a unique story, man, so I don't want to take any time away from that. Share your journey, kind of how you got into strength and conditioning and, you know, kind of where it's led you in your current roles.
It's probably not unlike most people. But
no, it's definitely unlike most people.
I mean, just the onset in the beginning, you know, I'm not just a typical college athlete, right? That's kind of how the story goes for all of us. I was my sport of choice was baseball. I was at Troy University, and one thing led to another. I just needed to continue on. I had a passion for baseball, stopped playing baseball, and I always enjoyed training. I think that was, for me, the unique thing was, like I said, effort is king for me. Effort was my way of kind of, you know, shorting that gap between, you know, sport-specific performance and skill. So I spent a lot of time training and stayed on at Troy in grad school and worked under Richard Shaughnessy, who's still there. And, you know, from there, I just kind of, I always missed that team aspect of sport, so
absolutely.
I joined the Navy, so and that's kind of where I think the roads for the normal kind of go a little bit off the path. So,
that's right.
You know, I spent 11 years in the Navy as a SEAL. Initially, was a SEAL Team 5 for almost 4 years, and then from there, I moved out to Virginia Beach and was at Naval Special Warfare Development Group. And spent about my last 7.5 years there, both as a SEAL, and then I was the active duty head for Naval Special Warfare Human Performance Program. So all the studying and testing and basically just being a guinea pig, that's pretty much was my job. And again, it was kind of born out of necessity because
sure.
My body was failing and I needed some help bad. So I mean, you can throw so many buzzwords out there about mobility and flexibility and just pain and all this sort of stuff. And I have 17 combat deployments. I have 106, let's see here, x-rays done.
It's not one of the stats that's usually thrown out on the show, but I like it.
Yeah, it's here at 17 concussions.
Wow.
26 MRIs, 7 CT scans, and better off now than I was 2 years ago. You know, like I was a mess. So
right.
Pain meds, couldn't sleep, irritable, the whole nine. You know, that's the kind of for me, the standard stuff. I just, now I'm happy and healthy. And I'm just lucky to, you know, I just lucky to be here, man. My son was my salvation. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, we talked about a little bit off camera about that. And that's one of the things that drew me to you so much is, I mean, here's a guy that's so accomplished, and we're constantly talking about keeping family first and knowing your priorities and keeping it the right way. And it's so hard to do in our chosen profession, but you know, the guys that do it and do it well, they stand out. And so, man, I echo that 100% and appreciate you saying that, especially as badass of a dude as you are, you know, right? Sometimes it's hard to say that, you know, your son or your kids can break you down, man, but they can in a heartbeat. And it's neat to hear. Tell how SEALs are done, you know, as an operator anyways. And so now you've chosen to go into strength and conditioning, right? And you're opening Virginia High Performance, which is a fantastic platform that you're going to have there in Virginia Beach. Talk to a little bit about what you're doing there and kind of what your goal is with that business.
You know, it was always in the back of my head as something I kind of wanted to do, but I wasn't sure I was going to buy it off of my own facility. I got my CSCS when I, you know, 15, 13 years ago, right? Kept coaching and teaching. Kept my CUs up and went to the conferences and that sort of thing. And I started working at when I got out, started doing it more and more, and some of my clients are different parts of the country, Colorado Springs, Florida, places. And the question was always, well, where's your place? And I would always respond, I don't really have a place. It just became, again, my buzzword, it was born out of necessity, right? So, right. Again, I'm super blessed, right, through my endeavors of, I hate to use the word, really networking, like it's, but it's essential, right? And I met the right people. That's one of those skills I took away from the SEAL community is reading people really well. So I met people like Bert Soren and Sornex, and they, not only are they, I mean, they're just, him and Richard, his father, like salt of the earth, good people.
Absolutely.
So, again, I met with them and the other folks in the facility from Clay, like Jeff Thompson and the guys like that. They just took care of me, and it was good. And moreover, their products are fantastic, right? So we met with doing all that stuff and got, you know, the idea basically went on the paper at that point. Got with my partner, and who's also, you know, about to be a former SEAL, about to retire after 22 years, and we're gonna take on the world, you know, like world domination. That's the plan. So
there you go. And we talked a little bit off camera, but what's the goal? What's the perfect clientele? What are you trying to accomplish within that community there?
Yeah, the big goal is kids. I think and I believe, I truly believe this to my core, that there are a lot of people that call themselves professionals in our profession, but a lot of them don't really invest the time and effort, not only into the sound knowledge base, but the people that may need it most.
Right.
And those are the kids. Right. We can, you know, we've heard so many people that have that voice, like Kelly Starrett and guys like that. They're talking about, you know, people have mobility issues. And I don't really say mobility. I say people just don't move very well, right?
Right.
But like Joe Ken, and he's like, yeah, the guys can run like lightning, but they can't move crap, right? So
that's right.
So that was my thing. It was like, we need to affect children before they get to the college setting. And the best way to do that is through sound education, not only the kids, but the parents, right?
Right.
In an ethical manner, right? That's the big thing, is it has to be ethical. And then if kids want to go on to college athletics, then they've already been exposed to it in my facility, because it's structured very much like that. It's a team setting in a team environment, and it's team building, but they're getting science-based coaching. And I think that's the big thing. I know I heard on your show before, and I think it was talking with David Joyce, where, you know, historically Europe has been very good at the science, but not the best at coaching, and vice versa in the United States. Coaching has always been very paramount, science not so much. I'm trying to bring it together as best I can. It's age appropriate.
Yeah.
So, I'm not going to hook up a 9-year-old to an Omega Wave.
That's right.
I'm going to make sure that they're moving properly before I put them under heavy resistance, heavy relative to their age, of course. But I think that's the thing, is kids, man. The smiles, again, if you can get an athlete of any sport, bring him in here. This may be not just, I'm not picking on any sport, that's not so good at volleyball, for example.
Right.
Very athletic, and they can excel in here. And then that confidence is going to spill over onto the court.
That's absolutely right.
So that's my goal, is bring the kids in and give them a real good experience.
Well, I think so much of, you know, like, why we all kind of go into coaching is because we want to make this huge impact on the people that we touch, you know. And you talk about an age group that you can make the biggest impact on when they're trying to find themselves, and they're athletically, they're just kind of growing into their bodies, and let's face it, in an age of, you know, fatherless homes or motherless homes or single parent, lots of negative and lots of things hitting from the outside, to be able to have a constant voice. Positive voice, building them up, a platform of confidence, and like you said, teaching them how to give great effort is a skill that they're going to be able to apply to anything they choose to do in the rest of their life. And so it sounds cliche, but I mean, that's exactly how those things are formed, right?
Right. And as you know, the college strength coaches and even some of the athletic trainers, I think we should all receive some honorary degree. in psychology at some point, right? Because any gossip or issues that happen with our athletes, they don't typically go to their coach, their sport coach. They end up spilling their beans basically in the weight room or come to the strength coach. I mean, that was always been my experience. When there was issues, emotional, social issues at Troy, first person I heard about was Richard Shaughnessy and I.
Yep.
Because they care. Like, I mean, that was the one thing with strength coaches they always find is the time that we spend with our athletes, it's year round all the time, right? So you're right. I mean, that's where it's at.
Well, and that's what, and I think it's one of the professions that understands that, you know, I always say it on the show that you spell love T-I-M-E, right? You know, so spending time outside of the weight room and developing that relationship outside of the weight room, you're able to ask so much more of them when they're in the weight room, you know, and on the conditioning court or whatever. And so I couldn't agree with you more. You know, one of the things that I talk about, you know, especially with like my experience with the NFL and things like that is the higher you go, you kind of get the more informed consumer you get, right?
Right.
And, you know, when you're at the elite, when you're in the Navy SEALs and you're the elite, when you have an issue, you seek out the best, right? And that's one of the things that I, you know, your journey I think is so cool is that, like, when you had a problem with sleep, you went to the, you know, you went to AIS and the sleep, you know, the sleep studies that they're doing. When you had a problem with your back, you did this. When you had a problem with concussions, you did this. You talked to this person. You and I both know that as strength coaches, you know, there's this wall that's kind of put up sometimes. It's like, oh, I can't talk to that guy, or there's so much distance, and the world's shrinking, you know. Talk a little bit about how you – I know the SEALs kind of helped you with a platform that were you able to get into some doors that maybe a lot of people wouldn't.
Right.
But it still takes the initiative, right, you know, to go do it. Talk about how you were – you know, you're just like, I'm going to seek out the best, and I'm going to learn from the best.
Yeah. You know, if there's one thing I'm not, that's shy. So, again, here's kind of the simple scheme of things is the SEAL team that I came from in Virginia Beach, they are not in the business of sharing. Just like you said, most universities, and specifically most international institutions like Australian Institute of Sport, or even any U.S. Olympic Training Centers, Manchester United, places I visited, they're not in the business of sharing either.
Right.
Because we're mutually not in the business of sharing, we share. You know, that was kind of the end to us, right? And so a lot of the stuff that we were dealing with sleep and stress, specifically the sympathetic, parasympathetic, and the central nervous system, because that was a big thing. We are the poster child for being sympathetic.
Yep.
I mean, it's absurd. Like when I was, my testosterone, for example, was being tested. I was 28 years old and my testosterone was 16. And which is normal, is 300, right? It's for a low, that's considered low.
Right.
I should have been 800.
Wow.
So I was sort of thinking, my cortisol was through the roof. I was up, I go 4 months without seeing the sun. I was getting 3 hours of sleep every 3 days in total. So that's kind of where my body, you know, I was like, all right, so like you're saying, getting back on track here, we had that Mark Stevenson, who's the program manager, who was my mentor and is brilliant.
Yep.
So he had that initial networking. I'm like, okay, where do we go? So we basically threw our fishnet out, so to speak, and started getting people interested in helping us, and vice versa, because they were, a lot of those organizations, and AIS that is doing it right now, has been doing it for a while, is their selection process. Well, how do we select people? How does that command select people, the SEAL community, and how can they take on some of those pieces to better select and identify their athletes for traits that are not so much skill-oriented or effort-oriented, but really it's character.
Yep.
Character is everything when it comes to high performance. And again, that's a whole other PhD type thing that I've been going down. So, but that's kind of the roadmap is I had the ability, because of my position from the command, admittedly, to physically go to these places. I flew to Australia, Canada, and all over the place to see these very specific pieces of equipment, technology, devices, or people.
Yeah.
Pick their brain and then take away some of that stuff, and we have our own model. And a big part of seeing like what Sean Hulse is doing with the Philadelphia Eagles, very much of what he was able to take away to the Eagles, he has. And but last year had the lowest incidence rate of injury in the history of the NFL.
Yep.
And a lot of that is preparation, and it's targeting the central nervous system, right? Making sure that they're able to deactivate that post-activity, right? So they can sleep and digest food and all those sort of things. So that's like my focus is, how do I recover? And that's
sure.
What they are. So.
Well, that leads us down a lot of questions that I had, you know, and how you've been able to kind of bridge the gap between, you know, the kind of the military community and the athletic community, one being that recovery piece. You know, I mean, we talk about parasympathetic, you know, HRV and kind of, you know, kind of going down that route. You know, what as well as I do, especially your experience with Troy, is that, you know, it's also as you go down, you kind of become an uninformed consumer, right?
Yeah.
And so dealing with athletes, you know, if I said, come in and tell me how you feel or do an HRV, they're, you know, it's going to be extremely low because, they're staying up late. They're maybe going out and putting the wrong things in their body, you know, all those types of things. And you can't not train because,
right,
you know, because of the schedule. So, you know, working with more elite level athletes, how would you talk, what kind of advice would you have for the college strength coach, the pro strength coach, that's dealing with some, you know, some guys that are still growing up, you know, but still have to get the mission accomplished?
Absolutely. There's a couple limiting factors for sure, and I think you hit on them. One is compliancy, right? You have to have compliancy of something that is like HRV or very specific technical stuff. You have to have compliancy, otherwise you can't get good data from it, right?
Right.
And also time management and kind of, Is it really relevant in that sport or that athlete? I mean, that's the big thing. Those are the other components to it. But you know, in terms of advice that I would have, like, there are things that I think, again, this is a blanket statement and this is not a judgment statement, but there's things that we can do better. And
absolutely,
not to you can't go into a dynamic high pull if that person doesn't have good motor function in the lower extremities. I mean, that's the thing, is you can't get some, you don't, I mean, and again, I'm not picking on like RG3, for example, but if you look at his combine photos, right, and he's got the big, like, spalgus knees and his landing is terrible, and now you're like, well, can we draw that line? Maybe, maybe not. But as a professional, I'm going to make sure that I'm in a position to not be in that position.
Sure.
That's the thing, is we have to have good fundamental foundational work before we get moving fast. Because, you know, as you increase the velocity of the body, bad movement gets exacerbated. It doesn't improve. So I think that's the biggest thing, is we have to do anything. Because, again, most strength and conditioning programs are centered around probably the squat, the bench, the clean, maybe some deadlifts. Some of the shot putters are going to do some Olympic lifts. Something that I found out is, and I know you, I've heard it, it's like, the more I know, the less I realize I know.
Absolutely.
And I know I enjoy doing Olympic lifts, and I know I like to teach them, but I know I'm not really qualified, really. So, which is why, in a week and a half, I'm having Colin Burns and Courtney Bachelor coming to my place, who is the American record holder, the snatch. They're both national champion Olympians. To teach it for 2 days here.
Yeah.
I could tell somebody, and I know the teaching points, but the finite pieces of coaching that I have in other elements, I don't have it for Olympic weightlifting.
Right.
So, just as a coach, especially, I know Bert touched on it before, it's like you have those phases of like, I know it all, I don't know that much, now I don't know anything, right? Know that. Like, know that if you're a young strength coach, got to be humble. You've got to have some humility and realize that. And it's an interesting dynamic, because a lot of times strength coaches, there's a lot of like, hey, you're the new strength coach, you've got to answer all these issues. It's not a bad idea to seek guidance elsewhere.
Absolutely. You know, when you're talking, the problem is that you have to be an expert in so many areas, right? You have to be an expert in speed and power and balance and kinesthetic awareness and skill acquisition and nutrition. And there's just no way of being an expert in all those areas.
Right.
You know, there's always somebody better, And
absolutely.
And so having a really great network and those types of things is the most important thing. But you know, I want to kind of dial in. I want to drill in on a little bit of what you said, though. So like RG3, I'm with you 100%. But now say RG3 is a SEAL team member, right? And he's on SEAL Team 5 or whatever. And he comes through selection, you know, gets there. He's a member. Like his movement patterns, his mobility, his anatomical structure and everything is already set, you know. And so the mission, like he's inserted, you know what I mean? So after the fact, after some of these bad patterns have been created, how do you regress, you know, so that you can kind of, you can start back over, but still be physically capable to do the job, you know? And that's the hard part. I think what I fight with football is, you know, yeah, I might get this true freshman coming in. I might have a month with them. I'm smart enough to see all the problems. But now that guy might be starting for us week one.
Right.
You know, and, you know, so how do you balance that?
For me, this is how I do it and approach it, is that, again, when you build it, you got to build that trust with your athlete.
Absolutely.
Young or old, doesn't matter what it is, or you're in professional athletics and you have a new player that gets, you know, traded from the Giants to the Eagles or whatever it may be, right? You have to build that rapport. And it's like that's universal, more or less. So my experience as a coach and as a SEAL and teaching those sort of guys as well is you're dealing with certain, again, stereotyping. You know, you're dealing with certain personality. If you go to any of those athletes or military personnel, the high-level guys, and you go, hey, your programming, your working program is garbage, throw it out. They're going to draw back, and they're not going to listen to you. If you do that with their diet as well, nutrition, you go, your stuff is garbage, throw it out. They'll draw back and won't listen to you. But I learned this piece of advice from Matt Patriarca, who's a defensive coordinator for the Patriots, and I asked him, I said, how do you get guys like Junior Seau to listen to you, you know, former, right? Junior Seau since passed, but with knowing Matt Patrick had never played in the NFL or in high level, you know, Division I athletics, and he said it's trust. He goes, what I do is I look at video of his opponent the next week and I dissect it. And then I come to him and go, hey, don't change how you're training, don't change how you're preparing, don't change anything, but here's some little golden nuggets to enhance what you're already doing.
Sure.
So I think that's the big thing, is you don't necessarily gonna dive in to completely revamp someone's programming or their diet necessarily. You give them pieces like, well, how do I recover better? How do I sleep? How can I help this guy sleep? How can I help this guy deal with stress? You give him things that are enhancers. And then eventually, once you get that athlete's trust, they're going to come back to you and go, hey, coach, I need you to look at my program. Like, I'm not getting out of it, but I think I should be. Or, hey, my programming in the weight room is fantastic, but I feel like I'm really sluggish and I plateaued. Then you go, hey, well, let's take a look at your diet program. And then he makes it's small tweaks, because unless you come, and we do have those people that come to us and go, I need a total tune-up and lube job. You know, right. I need a complete overhaul. And then you give it to them and they follow it. So I think that's what it is. Again, it's the psychology of it, right? You have to get to know your athlete. Big surprise, right? To get to know your athlete and see where you can enhance what they're already doing.
Right.
Instead of completely change it, because they're, like I said, they're going to draw back. You know, that coach is crazy. I don't want to deal with him.
Sure.
So, again, that's how I approach things. Now, if a team comes to you, right, like the sports that come to you and you're writing their program, you're still doing it, right? They're going to do the program, they're going to do it, and then you're monitoring it, and then again, it's just like you do a college athlete. You engage your athletes to say, how are things working in class, at home? Like, hey, just a constant reminder, because like you said a million times, 22 hours a day you don't have
them. Right, right.
So, slow process.
No doubt. Well, so, you know what, like for in your setting now, you're going to get a freshman lacrosse team to come in, right? And right. You have to provide a base level of programming for them to play the sport. How are you gonna, you know, how are you gonna get to the point where it's a specificity to each individual athlete, you know, right. from a programming standpoint and from a supervision standpoint?
Right. There's, again, just like college athletics, or they should be, in my opinion. We the athletes come in and we set baselines.
Right.
I mean, you can't program unless you know where they came from. So we set baselines for everything. It's age appropriate. We're not going to back squat a 9-year-old girl.
Right.
And we're just going to see if she can move. That in itself is a baseline.
Sure.
We have a vertec. We're going to have new broad jumps. We're going to do certain things, right? So, that's the big thing. And then in terms of specificity, again, look at the planes of movement, right? That's the big thing. And then we're going to say what planes of movement. In a whole sport, it's pretty much all planes of movement. But like softball, for example, or lacrosse, there's a lot of rotation, right? So you're dealing a lot in that plane. But also, you're also going to look at the mathematical component, the Newton. Like, are we looking at power strength? We're looking at endurance.
Right.
What percentage is it? Okay, so like a volleyball player, I need a lot of power, right? And we need to clearly define that to the athlete and parents of that age. Go, because they're going to think power lifter. They're going to think.
Yeah.
No, we're going to explain to you very simple terms of Newton's force equals mass times acceleration. Like, that's what we're looking at. That's power. It's derivative of time, right? So, and that's the big thing is it's an education process. And I think that's what really parents are looking for, too, and athletes. And I think kids are brilliant. Kids are brilliant. And we don't give them enough. A lot of times adults don't give them enough leeway to say that kid can understand what I mean by I need to get them to point A to point B as fast as possible. That's power.
That's right.
And they want to know that. They want to be students of their sport.
Well, it's empowering as well.
Education is empowerment, absolutely.
No doubt. I agree with you 100%.
That's where the specificity is. It's planes of movement, is it strength, power, endurance, and educate. That's huge for me.
I agree 100%. What about, now obviously, team is everything in the SEAL community and the special operations community, and obviously there's it's different stakes, right? If you're not together, then there's going to be bad things happen, right?
Right.
But what values have you taken from your experiences as in the military and applied them to teaching team building with your athletes?
I think I mentioned a little bit off camera, and I may have mentioned it again. Excuse me, I've had 17 concussions, so my memory's a little foggy. It's culture. It's establishing a culture the moment they walk into this facility or your weight room or anyone's. It's okay, here's the rules, and we're going to follow them. It's like you're not coming in here with modified clothing. You're not coming in with a cut-up T-shirt. You're coming in here to train, right? You're coming in as a team. You're going to train as a team, okay? And, the first 3 to 5 times they come in, we have got to get rid of that stigma with them. We're not forcing off them, but the stigma, it's like stress inoculation in the military. The more you're exposed to something, even if it's verbally or visualizing, the less stress you encounter after the fact, right?
Yeah.
Same with sport. When you bring these male or female athletes in, we say, hey, listen, this is all new to you. These coaches, we're all new to you. We understand that. So just do your best. And very quickly, they're going to get that stigma of like they're watching me, they're being critical of me, they're judging me, very quickly go away. And that team building, so on the sports field, there is separation of that team building. Not so much the D-backs, right? The D-backs are together, the linemen, the skill athletes, the quarterbacks, the kickers, the kind of, then they have to come together as a team. Well, in softball, like you got 12, 13-year-old, different positions kind of, but they're all together. Well, we bring them in here, everyone's on the same playing field.
Right. And
for me, that's super important, going, hey, effort is king. Effort is everything. Humility and effort. Come in here, give me all you got within the scope of what we're trying to accomplish, and let that carry over, because at the end of the day, from a physiological, psychological, and neurological standpoint, you have far exceeded what your competitors are doing.
Right.
And that's empowerment, right? That's huge. So that's the competition that happens on the field is similar to what happens in the training facility or weight room or whatever it is. But it's different. It's a different energy. And it's exciting because there's no failure.
Right.
Effort. There's no failure in effort. And I think that's the beauty of it. Like, now I'm not saying everyone's a winner and everyone gets a ribbon. That's not what I'm saying. I just,
right.
Give me everything and everyone wins. So your team wins, you win, parents win, everyone. So that's where, I mean, that kind of bridged that gap is you can't fail in here if you give it your all.
That's 100% right, man. I'm totally with you. What about you know, like, obviously, again, I mean, your training leads up to all the different things as a military operator. But, you know, one of the things that we fight with as coaches, as you know, is maintaining our athletes' focus, right? You know, they come in, their girlfriend broke up with them, they got an F on a test, they may have they're dinged up with their elbow. You know, they're coming in with all these different outside stressors, and you got to lock them in for a short amount of time to get, and not only that, but I'll be honest with you, you know, even going into games nowadays, you're still fighting, you know, cell phones and texting and all this stuff. And you're sitting there going, good Lord, I mean, this is what you trained to do. This is what you invested all these hours in to do. Is there any kind of tactics or recommendations that you have in terms of getting somebody locked in right in the moment?
Yeah. And I think from, like, again, we'll just use this, stereotypical, traditional, like, we'll just say strength coach, right? Your school season comes to an end. You know you have your athletes coming the next school season. You've got to, or even if you've been in it for a long time, you have to establish the culture early and often, right? It's like it or not, adults are just big kids, right? We just try to get away with more.
Yeah.
So in college and everything, it's like if you waver from your ideals, they will. If you give an inch, you know, you'd say, kid, you give an inch, you'll give take a mile. And a college athlete, you give an inch, they'll take infinity.
Yeah,
it will, and you'll never get it back. So, and I said this in one of my presentations, is that, you know, I think the most powerful word in English language is no. And if you never use the word no, they'll never respect. You'll get to the point where you're constantly giving yes, 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 yes. And then when you say, hey, no, the guy coaches, he's funny. You're not. So for me, It's again, as soon as they come into your training facility, right, you've established that culture. Now we're human. There are going to be times where you're going to battle these sort of things. But when you as a coach take your athletes aside and say, hey, this is what I expect of you, that's going to mean a lot more than you going, hey, you're all screwed up. You need to stop this. Everyone put your cell phones away. They're just going to think, like, this guy's just, I don't have to listen to him. He's being emotional or rad. But again, if you create that emotional culture, I mean, that you have to.
Yeah.
You should never get it back otherwise.
Right.
Never will. They'll always be like, yeah, Coach Nichols, he's smart and everything, but he's the fun coach. Now, fun should be part of what we do, right?
That's no doubt.
As well.
No doubt.
You can't be good cop and bad cop all the time. You can't.
No, so, absolutely. It's culture.
It's right away.
You know, a guy I worked for, Derek Dooley, would always say that coaches were once athletes as well, you know. And so, you know, you got to protect against them trying to get away with the same stuff sometimes, you know. And so you're right. I mean, I constantly, when I speak, most guys will hear me say that I'm a principle-based strength coach, not just a philosophy-based strength coach, you know. And that's not just in my principles of strength and conditioning. That's in my principles of how I run my room, how I live my life, how I, you know, how I parent my kids, you know, and you have to have that as coaches, or you're right. You're going to, you don't know where no is, you know? And so I agree with you. I'm always kind of taken back sometimes by not, you know, not coaches just here, but coaches everywhere, where it's like, how in the world, I mean, what kind of environment is that we're able to get away with that even, you know?
We always ask why. Like, why is it like this? Again, cause and effect. There is a reason. Now, those reasons may be external, right? They may be because someone broke up with, you know, a relationship or something at home, or there are reasons, and those are acceptable too. Because you have, when your athlete comes to you, you as a human, and again, as like kind of a psychologist, you have to go, what you're experiencing is normal.
Right.
So this way, I get you. I understand. Let it happen. Let those emotions happen. But right now, let's see if we can measure, like, how you're feeling. Let's still try to perform a little bit. You still got a job to do.
Right.
Right. So, like, but that goes back with relationship. You never be able to have those open dialogues with your athletes that are very serious and heartfelt if you haven't built that that rapport with them.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, you hit it right there. I was going to say that. I mean, it all comes back to your relationship with the athletes. And it's also, as a young coach, a lot of times you jump to emotion right away. Always late, you know, it's the end of the world. I'm going to kill you. Da 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 da. Right. But sometimes you got to take emotion out of it. You got to dissect it. You got to find out what's going on. Doesn't mean you don't still hold them accountable to their actions. But you got to have, you know, as long as they have an opportunity to kind of give their side of the story sometimes, you know. And that's what I tell our athletes. I tell them, I said, look, if you know, with our athletes in our weight room, it doesn't matter what the reason. And I tell them, I'm like, look, you could have stopped, flipped a car over an old lady, you know, that was, you know, was crushing an old lady. You flipped it off her and you got here 5 minutes late. You're still late, you know. Yeah. And so we have the accountability for that. Yeah. But I appreciate what you did, you know, right. and everything
there's
has.
Certain things, yeah, you have to be objective, because again, from human response and behavior, if you're erratic in a household that's like the mom and dad are always, the hair's always on fire, the kids are going to reciprocate.
Right.
You as a coach, you can come up and down, but when it comes to teaching, if you're even and you're analytical and you're objective, they're going to take that on. People are smart, and there's a lot of subconscious too, but they're
going to
take that on.
Oh, kids are definitely perceptive, and they'll pick up on things as well. I got one more question, and we'll get into some resources. One of the things that I've always taken away kind of from the Special Forces community is you know, there's as much focus on the selection process as there is on the training. You know, the training is intense, and it's, you know, they're constantly tweaking and making that better. But it's like, if you're not equipped to even handle, you're not going to make it. So why waste everybody's time, right? You know, so in the recruiting process, you know, I've always kind of joked around, because it's this constant, I'm going to tell you how great you are five times that I see you, but I haven't really dug deep into what makes you tick, you know? Is there any advice that you have to maybe the football coaches that are listening? You know, is kind of, what are the trigger questions to ask to kind of get to the core of a person, and whether or not that's going to fit to what you're trying to do?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because here, from the world I come from, right, is you touched on it, is that my world is attrition, where I come from. We will get rid of you.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily the case in amateur professional athletics, because you wouldn't have a team.
Right.
So, however, you cannot throw out character. Character is paramount. Like we from a distance as fans and as coaches and athletes, you look at the landscape of Division I football, again, for example, every team has their issues. Every player has issues. It is what it is, but there are teams that have more historically.
Sure.
And it's culture. And there's some things that are, you know, outside forces. But for us, the best advice that I can give, I mean, it's don't overlook character, because time and time again, I mean, again, from my experience with working with coaches that are selecting for the NFL Combine, that was a big thing that we were brought in to consult for really good NFL teams. Really good. And then historically, we consult a good bit. And that was the big thing, was we were given player profiles, and we took our character assessment pieces and added it to their screening. And those teams, I haven't had so many issues, is because, you know, the average lifespan of an NFL athlete is, what, about 3 years, right?
3 years, yep.
And unfortunately, it is still a business, right? It's not just a game. And these general managers and owners, they're going to make money off of you. And that's right. Okay, because you're getting paid well to do so. But you have to represent the team. And if you don't represent the team well, they can't make money off of you.
Right.
Right? You can't, those, if J.J. Watt was a total recluse, the Texans could not use him in an ethical manner, they do as a way to bring in fans and love for the game. Like, that's, you couldn't do that with him.
That's right.
You couldn't. So, like it or not, eventually, if you are a bad individual, if you are a person of low moral character,
not gonna last very long.
You will not have sustainment in that game. Period. Right. So that starts in college football. Is if that sort of idea is overlooked, and it is with regularity in some of the big programs. Because again, right, those guys, the average span of a blue chip college athlete is 2 years.
That's right.
So again, it's what are we? Are we looking at University X or University like Northwestern?
Right.
Stanford or Vanderbilt, or they all have issues, of course. But you know.
Well, you're absolutely right. And what's funny, what people think is that by bringing down, by providing this culture, by providing boundaries, you're going to run people off, you know, but it's actually the opposite. You know, by providing a boundary, people know where they can, you know, what to operate within, you know, and they can be themselves within that environment. And that's what I always battle with is, you know, it's like, you know, you can have the hardest of hard kid. But if you come and you provide a clear structure, you communicate it effectively, you build a relationship, you build trust. That's what everybody's looking for.
Yeah. You know,
that's what they're all looking for.
I heard a quote, and it may have been on yours, but I know I heard this quote once. If you have, like, you know, after a big flood, right, if you have strong banks on your river, you have a strong river. But if one of those banks, you know, erodes away, you just got a big mess.
Yeah.
So that's human nature. If you can have, like you said, a very volatile individual. But if they step into your training center or you're onto the field and your coach, like Bill Belichick, for example, he has clear, again, grew up in a military family, he has clear rules and guidelines. Pretty successful NFL team year in and year out.
Yeah.
So that was one of those things where, can you call it coincidence? I'd like to think not, because I've seen his structure.
Yeah.
It's pretty clear.
Well, and he's taking guys that were rejects by a lot of programs, and they've found a home and they found success. And so I agree with you 100%.
Just like you're saying, because again, adults are just big children. You give children no guidelines, they're all over the place. You give them clear rules to follow, they're going to go outside those rules, but that's normal.
That's learning, right? Yeah, exactly. Now, Matt, everybody that's listening, Jeff is putting together his facility right now. He's got people running all over the place, putting things together. So, man, you've been awesome, man, and I appreciate the time. Some quick resources before we go, and this is my favorite part of the show. What's the best piece of coaching advice you've ever received?
The best piece of coaching advice, hands down, is from Dan Gable. I grew up in Iowa, small town in Iowa.
Wrestler, love it.
About 30 minutes from Iowa City, my high school wrestling team was nationally ranked in 7 straight state titles in the state of Iowa, where
wow.
I came from. Just a juggernaut for wrestling. And we would regularly see Dan Gable. We'd either go to Carver Hawkeye Arena in Iowa City, or he would come to our practice.
Wow.
He looked at me one day, because we were just talking. I had some, again, I've never been shy. I was small. I was, you know, I wrestled 103 pounds my senior year of high school.
Did you really?
I'm 25 now. And so I grew after high school, right? So I was asking questions, just it was all relative to effort. And he was, that's what Dan Gable's always been known. He was just the killer, right? Just
awesome.
Not literally, but brilliant strategist. And he looked me dead in the eye and he said, there's always somebody out there tougher than you. And then he smiled and he goes, or you can be that guy. And I was like, I'll be that guy. And that's like, that was my entire life, was just like,
wow.
I'm that guy.
That's the best, man. What about a quote that you've lived by, or one that, you know, you've used with your athletes?
Yeah, I'm going to paraphrase it a little bit because it's kind of a long quote, but it's, again, I still, it's my, in my bedroom at my parents' house, I drew it out on a big poster. It was by Johnny Bench, and it was something along the lines of, you know, there are too many false things in life, and I don't want to be a part of them. If you say what you think or feel, people call you cocky or conceited. And then he said, you know, in the second grade, they asked me what I wanted to be, and I said a ball player, and they laughed at me. In the sixth grade, they asked me the same question. Again, I said a ball player, and they laughed even harder. By the 11th grade, nobody was laughing. and that for me, like, I still, it elicits emotion in me because I just,
yeah,
I was drafted twice in the Navy. I was drafted by the Angels and the Braves. I joined the Navy instead. 2 different years, obviously the same year, came drafted the same year, but that for me meant the world to me because I knew that the only way that I was going to be successful was if I outworked everybody.
Yep.
And that was my mission. Like I always had in my head, this is what I was going to do. For me to quit, you were going to have to either kill me or I'd have to be unconscious.
Right.
Period. And that's the way I approach life. That's the way I approach parenting. Not that no one's going to kill me, but I just think that if anything worth doing is raising your kids or being a coach or something you love, do it because if time passes you by, you will regret it. And when you regret it, that sting will be worse than the moment. It'd be the worst thing ever for me.
Ah, I agree.
Terrible. So
I just heard a quote not too long ago, but it was like something to the effect of the only way to not accomplish your dreams is to quit. You know, I agree with it. I know you're an avid reader. You know, give us maybe a book inside strength and conditioning and a book outside of strength and conditioning that you recommend, and then add an app and a website that you regularly check out.
Definitely, if you're a strength coach or you're a coach or a behavioral management specialist for coaches or athletes, I mean, like hands down, the high performance training, high performance training for sports by Dr. Joyce.
Yeah, David Joyce was on the show. Fantastic.
Like it is. It's again. I mean this in the highest respects of Christianity. Is exactly there. We go right. So yeah, there we go. I'm right here. So it's the Bible.
Yeah.
It's the most thorough, well thought out book I have ever read. It's brilliant for all ages.
I agree.
So. That's my book recommendation. Inside, outside. I've read so many.
Yeah, business leadership, motivation.
What's it called? Drive. What drives a human?
Dana Pink.
That is a really good book as well. And then I really like some of the old war history stuff, like that was based off of. The television show Band of Brothers, or the based off of, like The Helmet for My Pillow, and or the With the Old Breed. If that doesn't humble you, you're not human. You don't have a heart. So those absolutely. Are the things for me speak to me.
Oh, that's fantastic. What about an app and a website?
As far as an app, I like some of the app stuff. It's hard for me on the floor because I really like to be involved. I like the coach's eye.
Yep.
When it's relevant, not just filming up, because if you do it too much, you won't have. I mean, if you had dark fish and those sort of things, but
sure.
Some slow speed gait analysis or stuff, and you can kind of show, because kids are very they can understand the visual aspect better than they can the particular nuances of describing something, right? So showing them is easy. So I like the coach's eye. Was it the last
website? That you typically go to?
Yeah. I've become friends with the Juggernaut folks.
Yeah, Chad.
Chad and Brandon, and I really like their approach of, there's that science-based and evidence-based results, right? They're both. They like the both. They don't tout one the other, but I like that idea, and I've met them, and they're very realistic people. Elite FTS, obviously, has just got some good literature in it. You know, in a weird way, I kind of use Facebook as that kind of collect all, because you can unfollow all this stuff and just kind of funnel it.
Yeah.
I like that aspect of it. So that will lead me kind of down some rabbit holes sometimes.
And absolutely.
Weird enough, I like research. I really like research. I like reading. I read for 3 hours the other night when I was in Miami. I just started reading Pavlov's research about salivation and digestion because I had something in my head about the autonomic nervous system or digestion, how it affects performance and stuff. And I went down that rabbit hole for like 3 hours. So I got to get it out of my head, otherwise I won't sleep. So that's what I did. But that's kind of my loose suggestions, I guess.
But, oh, that's awesome, man. Well, brother, this has been a lot of fun, man. And you know, A, thank you for your service. B, thank you for doing it the right way, you know, the way that you're approaching your coaching career and what you're doing there in Virginia. And I can't thank you enough for taking time to share with the community here. And big things coming, man. I'm glad to know you and glad to call you a friend and look forward to developing even closer friendship.
Come visit you.
What's that again?
So now I'm going to come visit you.
Do it.
So anytime. I'm going to track you down to Summer Strong next June.
Bert and I have talked about it quite a bit as well.
Yeah. It's an event, man. I've been to a lot of conferences, probably not as many as you. I've been to 100 or more. What they put on down in South Carolina in June.
It is absolutely unbelievable. And I call them every year and I'm like, man, please just move it a weekend. Just move it one weekend. Because it's right in the middle of summer training and all that. But I'm gonna be there. I'm gonna make myself go. And every year I've kicked myself in the freaking head for not going.
I'm blessed, man. Meeting that, you know, I got to meet Zach M&S just sent me a book the other day.
Zach's fantastic too.
Meeting them and those guys, I just Donnie Thompson. That's my Disneyland, you know.
That's right.
Yeah, so I enjoy it, man. It's awesome. So
that's great, appreciate buddy. You having me. Thanks a lot, buddy. Take care, man.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.